Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
I usually am having a conversation with them come like October, you know, like we're getting into, you know, the first game, you know, first practices. Like, dude, you need to have patience because you ain't going to start here right away. Okay. And if they could, you know, fight through that. And it's funny, like come January, February, they're looking at me and laughing like, yeah, I get what you're saying, coach. But it's like, we had junior college kids in the past that have come not play like at all until like Christmas. And then they're averaging 17 points a game after Christmas because it takes time.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender. And today's episode is brought to you in part by one of our favorite sponsors, Connor Sports. Connor Sports is a world leader in sports surfaces, the official floor, the Final Four in the Olympics. They do everything from NBA teams all the way to rec centers. Contact ConnorSports.com for more information. Also, if you're not already a member of the Rising Coaches community and you want to become a member of the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit RisingCoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. For more information, visit RisingCoaches.com. Today's special guest, another Midwesterner, we got Tim Bergstrasser from Minnesota State University Moorhead. He's an assistant coach there. Coach, how you doing, sir?
Very well. It's been a solid day so far. Really, really excited to be here, man. It's a big thing for me, and I really respect what you guys do. You help us coaches out a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're a member, and I know you utilize the site. So tell us a little bit about your story. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got to where you are, how you're a Division II assistant right now, and, you know, kind of how, you know, from your transition from your playing days all the way into coaching.
Yeah, so it's creeping on like a decade now of just like me being in college coaching, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, I started playing at St. Cloud State University, and I was a 6'5 center. And I came in dang near as a walk-on for like a $1,000 scholarship. And I had full intentions on going to River Falls, Wisconsin, which is a D3 school. And literally like a week before I was going to commit, Matt Reimer and Kevin Schlegel at St. Cloud State, they asked me to come and play in an open gym. And I guess I held my own. They liked what I was doing, got a $1,000 scholarship, and I was able to stay home because I'm from St. Cloud. So it's kind of nice to be a hometown kid. And they were going to redshirt me, and, you know, I kind of earned my spot, and I was just playing physical. And I backed up an All-American. It was an absolute monster. And then we actually had a pretty good year that year. We went to the Final Four, which is a really fun experience for me as a true freshman to be a part of a Final Four team, which is obviously a big deal because anytime you make the national tournament in general, that's very, very difficult to do. Going into my sophomore year, I tore my ACL and my meniscus preseason, like a scrimmage right before our first game. So I was out for the year, sat that whole year. And then the next year I came back. We made it to the national tournament in Colorado. And then I blew my knee out a second time in the national tournament at Colorado School of Mines. I was having a career game, and unfortunately I went down, but that's just part of it. Rehabbed the whole another year, came back midseason the next year at like January, still wasn't feeling the same, finished out the year. At the end of the year, I talked to my doctor. He said he tore your ACL again. So I obviously, in my mindset, I was like, you know, I'm coming back. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to still make it work. And my head coach at the time, Kevin Schlegel, he talked to me and said, you know, Tim, like, you can't come back. Like, he's just thinking about my longevity of living and wanting to play with my future children. So that was one of the hardest things in my life to deal with, to be honest, because I really, really love this game and playing. And he's like, Tim, if you want to come and be a student assistant, you can honor your scholarship still, and you can have it. So he's like, if you want to come back, he's like, I can't allow you to come back and play. It's just like you're ruining your future of living. So that was I appreciate that so much from my head coach Schlegel at the time. And you know, Heather Weems was the AD. She helped me out a lot with stuff there too. And Matt Reimer, the assistant. So wasn't expecting to get into coaching, and that kind of, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I just wanted to play overseas. And, you know, a lot of people have that dream, and I was kind of an immature kid at the time. And thankfully they saw a bigger picture to set me up in it was my profession right now. And it's been a blessing in disguise. So I went to student assistant with St. Cloud State. Then after that, I went to River Falls, Wisconsin for a small little contract, and it didn't matter to me. I was hungry to get out there and start college coaching, and had a really good experience and really good head coach Jeff Burkhoff. He allowed me just to kind of do my thing and get out there and recruit a ton. So I really opened up my eyes. then really, you know, everybody's telling me you want to be a graduate assistant so you get that full-time assistant at some point. So Wazzer Falls, I literally reached out to every D1, D2 trying to get something. And I don't think guys understand how difficult it is to get a graduate assistant, let alone just any job in this, you know, in this profession. So literally I told my head coach Burkhoff at the time, like, all right, man, I'm planning on coming back. And literally like 2 days later, Minnesota State University Morehead gives me a call. Jordan Reaver is a good friend of mine. And they were just coming off like a 35-4 year. They made it to Elite Eight and had an interview, and it worked out. So I was able to be a graduate assistant at Minnesota State University Morehead. And my 2 years there, we were 54-12. We went back-to-back 31 seasons. So it was an unreal experience and made it to the national tournament 2 years in a row. After that, I was able to go to Quincy University in Illinois. I was there for 1 year, and you know, Ryan Hellenthal gave me a great opportunity to be a full-time assistant for him. And he let me again just do my thing and get out in recruiting, and he trusted me with all that. And after that year, I was able to come back to MSUM, fortunately, be closer to my family. And Justin Wick, who's now the head coach of Duluth, he got that job. So I was able to step in at MSUM, and been a heck of a ride so far. I absolutely love it here. My closer to my family, and my head coach, he's very intense. He's a competitor, so he's fun to work for. But yeah, it's been a fun ride, and you know, I absolutely love coaching. I'm totally obsessed with this stuff, so it's good.
Yeah, being passionate about your job is obviously extremely important. And your journey's, you know, you were almost like forced into coaching, which is kind of unique, you know, but you found a pit, you know, your niche, and you've loved it. And I think that's really cool, especially your journey. Talk to us a little bit about that GA experience. So, you know, in Rising Coaches, we run into a lot of people that are interested in, you know, hey, how do you transition from a student manager or a player into that first job of grad assistantship, and then, you know, into your first full-time job? You know, that first job is always the hardest to get. And you mentioned something I thought was unique, is say you didn't really care which level you went to. And a lot of people get caught up in the Division I aspect of it. But give us, you know, hey, a little bit of background of, you know, what are some advantages of being at the Division II or small college level of being a GA, you know, with being able to coach, being able to recruit, being able to do a little bit more instead of being more of an admin type or just kind of a glorified student manager.
Right. And again, I've kind of been in this a little longer now, but like back then I didn't understand that. And now I talk to these younger guys and I sound old saying that, but it's like, yeah, D1, GA, that's awesome. Okay, go for it. Okay, but it's still like as an overall coach, I don't believe you're going to get the same experience if you go to a D2. Okay, because like D1, you're not going to be able to hit the road as much as like a D2 coach would. So that's the thing I was so fortunate with when I was at MSUM as a GA is, one, they trusted me and they let me do my job. But literally, like I was on the road recruiting every other day, every weekend, you know, interacting with these coaches and players, you know, face-to-face. And it's like, that's not a thing that a lot of these D1 coaches or D1 GAs get to do. Now, at any level and any, you know, any title that you might have, there's so many titles in this job that are almost made up. But like it's everybody uses the word grind, and it is a grind. I mean, it's tough, and like you have to be extremely organized and you have to be really invested. And that's still not going to guarantee anything that you're going to win or be successful, but at least you're working hard to, you know, get lucky in a way in the end. But you know, it's if you're not organized, I really believe you're going to struggle. It's going to be a lot of early mornings, it's going to be a lot of late nights, and I know everybody's got their own ways of doing things, and some maybe say that you're not working smarter, you're just working too hard. But I mean, I'd be up till, you know, 2 a.m. and waking up at consistently at 4 a.m. and I tried to, you know, keep a good schedule of working out every day. But I mean, just with like the player development, all the film breakdown, all the recruiting, your head coach and assistant, you know, quote unquote above you, they're always going to be throwing miscellaneous tasks at you. So it's, if you're not organized again, you're really, really going to struggle with that in the end. Cause, but it's extremely rewarding, you know, if you do it right. Cause if, you know, you do right where you're at and you do well, usually that head coach or assistant is going to try to help you get a job once you leave. But it is a very serious job. And I tell a lot of guys that when we try to bring in graduate assistants here, and I tell them like my experience, and this is one of the most unforgettable things for me. And it was very rewarding. And like, if you come in here, and some packages for graduate assistants aren't as great as others. Like certain D2 schools, they might have like, they might give you a dorm, they might give you a meal plan and a really good stipend. It's like some place will give you just a stipend and it's small and they'll barely cover your credits. was like, you shouldn't get caught up in all that and just go to a spot like, all right, I could go here, I could coach, I can recruit, I could be on the floor with these players and coach them on the floor. You know, it's really beneficial for a young guy to get in the business, I think.
Yeah, sometimes easier said than done. And obviously people come from different backgrounds in terms of financial support and such. But yeah, the experiences are invaluable, especially at that level. You know, being able to make sure that you have the experience to continue to grow and develop as a coach is worth a lot more than, hey, I just got this paid for, or, you know, the status that goes along beside it. I just think that's extremely important. You know, when I was an assistant right here at Southwest before I got the job as a head coach, you know, I had to do every single scout. And that kind of happens at the, you know, different levels. You may have a GA and one assistant coach at your level. Well, being able to get the experience of doing that scouting was irreplaceable. Like, I basically did 28 scouts in a year. Well, right. Some people may do 12 in a year. So I did three times as many as everybody else in that, you know, whatever, that during that season. And it helped me grow faster at an exponential rate. And I think that goes a lot into, you know, picking that next spot for a lot of different people and what that looks like. Something that's unique with you too, and I think that speaks to your character and your ability to work hard, obviously, is, hey, you mentioned a couple schools. Hey, I was going to go to River Falls, but then I didn't go there. Then I went to St. Cloud and, you know, worked with some people and then, you know, went to be a GA. And you were hired back at those two of those three places because of who you are and how you work and different things. Like, not closing those doors, I think, is extremely important. And, you know, a lot of people look for the next job and different things, but you did a great job where you were, or that relationship and the recruiting process as a person, and what is able to open up more doors for you and go back to those places. So, you know, every day as a job, you know, is basically a interview. And right. If you treat it like that of, hey, doing the best job that you can, it kind of keeps those doors open, especially when you say no to other people, because, you know, everyone has feelings in different capacities, but not burning any bridges along the way. You mentioned something, you know, you were a 6'5 post player. So, you know, obviously any level, that's good. But, you know, you got a strong build to you and you look the part. But, hey, tell us a little bit about, you know, you being a 6'5 post player, maybe how that's kind of helped you in some type of player development standpoint. And obviously I think you work with Reed, correct?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, we're very
so, you know, he's one of the best trainers, and we had him on the podcast a few weeks back. But, you know, talk a little bit about, hey, some of your development philosophies, especially in the post and what you do.
Yeah, so, I mean, well, to be a post player, I mean, you need to be a little nasty, I think. Now, everybody wants that at a point guard spot through 1 through 5. Okay, they want a nasty player. But, you know, me being a 6'5 guy at a very competitive Division II league, one of the better ones in the nation, like, you have to be tough, you got to be physical, and you got to work hard. I mean, there's a lot of aspects to being a good post player, but – I mean, a lot of coaches, I think, want a high IQ post player because people are utilizing a post more like on the perimeter. And unfortunately, the back to the basket post is kind of dying nowadays. But, you know, some people are trying to, you know, integrate that more into what they do. You know, like just the rebounding factor. And I'm really big on ceiling. And I try not to always teach our guys exactly what I did. And I study the game a ton, especially with post players in the college level. But I try to really teach our guys ceiling. And I tell her, we have a 6'10 really athletic freak big man here. And I tell him all the time, I was like, dude, you could score 10 points a game lead off just catching the ball and finishing. Like, I shouldn't have to teach you all these fancy moves. And I'll really try to set up different ways for ceiling. I'll try to set up, I have like 6 bullet points for ceiling, different ways. I have like 4 or 5 different ways of just like dump downs, really focus on ball screen ceiling. Not just like back to the basket ceiling, but just trying to really set up game type scenarios for these guys when they get to the game, they could try to do it. And it takes time. Like, I've really learned that with big guys. I've done this for 8 years now at the college level, D2. And like, I could sit there and teach our big guy this his freshman year and ceiling. Like, he really might not click on that 2 years until after that. It was like that one time he does it, like I jump him and just like joy and like happiness for him. It's like, you got to do that now. Like, you get it. It's that easy. Okay, let's do it moving forward here. But, you know, I try to keep it simple as much as I can with like back to the basket stuff. And it's just a lot of just, you know, ceiling, of course, and just catching is obviously huge. And I really, really try to set up rebounding for our bigs. And, you know, really, it's hard for me to teach a guy how to rebound. And, I mean, that's what I prided myself on when I played. I mean, my goal every game was to get a double-double or at least 10 rebounds in a game. That's what I wanted. So I really try to teach our guys. And I know we talked to us before, but it's like the Dennis Rodman thing on The Last Dance is like on point, and that he literally just watched the ball off the rim every time and how it was like spinning out. And how can I teach a big man, like, all right, as the ball is in the air, you're trying to judge the trajectory of it before it hits the rim. And while you're doing that, you need to hold a guy off. And then before it hits the rim, while you got your balance, can you take a big step to go elevate and get it above everybody else? Okay, that's hard for me just to, like, all right, I just said that to you, but like, how are you going to translate that? How can I set that up for you on the floor? So literally you could just partner shoot. So like a lot of coaches do partner shoot every other day in practice. So I tell our bigs, it's like, hey, like it ain't goof around time. Like, yeah, I want you giving out good passes, but every time that he shoots, I want you kind of, you know, acting like you're boxing someone out and getting your feet prepared to jump and go and get it at its highest point. So I don't think, I know coaches do that, but I don't think a ton, you know, focus on that. But it's easier said than done. I just got it. It's reps on reps on reps on reps. It's unbelievable. And I'll literally sit there in a post workout and we'll do 30 minutes of straight hook shots. You know how it is with the raw post, but even like a really good post, like we're literally just going to keep it as basic as we can. And some days we'll get a little more complex, but without overcoaching, I try to help them with like the release on their hand and making sure there's good touch. But my first year as a GA, we had an All-American. He averaged 22 points a game. His release, he shot it like a shot. In my opinion, I don't like that, but everybody else coaches differently. And I was like, I'm not going to touch that. You keep just doing what you're doing. You're scoring 22 a game. So just in the end, you just try not to overcoach him too. So
yeah, every kid's going to be different. Every level is different, you know, but at the end of the day, I think I preach the rep part as well, and understanding what it is that we're trying to do and teach them and figure out how they learn and maximize that. But I'm big on, hey, you talked about ceiling, H-ing up. We get a lot of fouls by putting our hands when we're posting. We teach a lot of stuff with angles and ball screens as well. Give them free space off the coverage of what it looks like to flip the angles and do different things. We teach a lot of stuff with a short roll. We do a lot of drills with passing out of the short roll. And then when we do post, as little as it is, you know, squaring up on your outside foot to use that inside foot for leverage, especially when you have smaller, skinnier posts. That are not as strong. So they utilize their leverage and their balance in the post. I think those are my biggest things when I work with big men. I'm only 5'8", but I love the big men. I did that. I was a manager at Minnesota. So obviously we had some very good bigs there. Colton Iverson, Ralph Sampson, you know, Spencer Tolleson, right. Really skilled bigs, and Trevor Bakwe. And I love to go down with the post because I was a guard, so I knew a lot with guards already. And so I was like, hey, I want to learn something different. Plus, you know, as a manager, we were hitting guys with pads, we were passing more, we were coming off ball screens, a little more fun. So I always went down with the bigs. It was, and learned a lot more. And now I would say, even though our guards and our system usually lead us in scoring, we've had some really good bigs here. And a lot of that comes down to the skill development that we put our bigs through, and things like that. So that's awesome. But so you mentioned a couple other things. So we're kind of circle back, but one is recruiting, and you talked about the experiences at GA. You know, hats off to you. You're in a very cold region, and you guys have continued to get good players. You know, is there a trick to recruiting, or what are some things that you do that may be unique in terms of how you find out who's out there, how you gather data, how you go about recruiting to a colder region or to the Division II level that people don't always understand?
Yeah, so when it comes to high school guys, we try to stay, and I'm doing more so of what our head coach wants. I'm trying to recruit to what he would like for his program, and but we try to stay Midwest and within our region for high school guys. Now, if we have a connection with someone in Arizona, and I trust the coach and the player we believe is really good, okay, we'll bring a kid up here. But we try to stay local. We want to bring in, you know, families to our games and stuff like that. So. More so with like junior college, we bring in a junior college or a transfer probably every year. But so obviously for junior college and transfers, I mean, we'll recruit absolutely anywhere for that one. And, you know, we have a pretty good product here at MSUM, and you know, I think it sells. And, you know, we've been fortunate to win a lot of games over the years. And I really try not to BS these guys. I really do think there is some coaches out there that sell a bag of lies. And I'm trying to be respectful, but I know some coaches do that, unfortunately, to these kids. And, you know, I really try to tell these kids as I'm talking to them right away, it's like, I'm really not going to try to have any gray area with you. I want you to know where we stand. I'm going to be extremely open to, you know, last year, for example, we started, you know, our five guys, we returned all of them. Bring in a transfer, we try to tell them, like, hey, man, you're not going to start right away, probably. And with junior college or transfers, it takes till like January, February sometimes for these guys really to understand and click on that. And, you know, once those guys understand, I've had that conversation, it's funny, almost every single year with a junior college or a transfer kid that's come through here, I usually am having a conversation with them come like October, you know, like we're getting into, you know, the first game, you know, first practices. Like, dude, you need to have patience because you ain't going to start here right away. Okay. And if they could, you know, fight through that. And it's funny, like come January, February, they're looking at me and laughing like, yeah, I get what you're saying, coach. But it's like we had junior college kids in the past that have come not play like at all until like Christmas. And then they're averaging 17 points a game after Christmas because it takes time. But so I try to be very open with that entire process when I'm recruiting these guys. Once we have designated who we want, I mean, there's hundreds of kids, hundreds of highlight tapes that all coaches watch. It's like, you know how it is when you watch that highlight tape. It's like, all right, this kid's a heck of a player. Okay, he could really be an impact guy. We believe he maybe could be an all-league player. Okay, now I'm going to start watching game film after I've talked to him and the coach on the phone and maybe whoever his handler is. Everybody has a handler nowadays. But again, being connected with the openness part, I don't shed away from saying, yeah, it's cold as heck up here. Okay. And if you want to be at the beach more than you want to be in the gym, this ain't the place for you. Okay. And I really try to, I ask that usually in my first conversation when I'm on the phone with these kids. And, you know, is Minnesota too far? I mean, I talk to a lot of, you know, Southern JUCOs. Is Minnesota too far? And if it is, I mean, we're cool with that. You just got to let us know right away. I don't want to waste your time. I don't want, you know, you to waste our time. Cause I mean, there's a large list. And, but, you know, like with the database, especially with junior college, man, it's, maybe I do a little overkill, but I've just been one that I really try to work hard, like a lot of coaches in this profession. And maybe I do a little more than others. Maybe it's a little more extreme. People think it's too much. But I literally will look through every single stat for every JUCO team out there and just designate, all right, this guy's a bigger – we want a bigger guard. All right, he's a bigger guard. He's averaging, you know, good points, and he's shooting well above, you know, 30-plus percent from three. Okay, that's what I'm trying to fixate on. I'll put him in the database. And then once I got all that for all the junior colleges, then I'll really start to, all right, it's time to watch some highlight tapes. I watch highlight tapes. I watch synergy clips. I check all their Twitter is, eventually get on the phone with their coach. Because it really, sometimes with these junior college kids or even transfers, it is a battle to get contact information. And I'm not comfortable just to bring in a kid that I've talked to, but I haven't talked to his coach. Okay, and I think that's all a lot of coaches would say. And I just, you know, my job as an assistant coach is to bring in some, or help bring as a team, bring in some good players. So I don't feel comfortable just bringing in any kid that we barely talked to or haven't talked to his coach, because we really want to understand his character. And we'll bring in, you know, guys with some baggage. Like, we're not afraid of that. You know, our head coach, you know, Chad Walto, he's done a heck of a job dealing with guys that have had, you know, hard upbringings. And, you know, sometimes they just need to be humbled. And either it works or it doesn't, but we've had a pretty good luck here bringing in guys to transform their lives a little bit. But I mean, it's endless hours of watching highlight tapes, and another sense of just being well organized. And because just like networking is hard to do if you don't do it right, and you got to really be organized with that so you can talk to your people. It's a very powerful thing what we do. And same thing with anything with recruiting, whether it's high school, junior college, or transfers. Like, you got to stay on top of them. You got to check box scores. I mean, every time I work out in the morning, I'm checking box scores like it's my newspaper. So, I mean, it's just a lot going into it that I don't think a lot of coaches understand, especially younger coaches, like as they're getting into graduate assistants, for example. So,
yeah, utilizing that data and what's out there. You know, there's plenty of websites and different things. Obviously, there's the portal. Obviously, there's Twitter, social media, and different things. But utilizing those resources to do your own homework and dig a little bit deeper, I think, is extremely important. And then organizing it, like you said, you know, like tonight we're going to, you know, FaceTime a bunch of the kids that we're recruiting. You know, it saves us a little bit of time, money, and energy, money to go and see them specifically. But hey, meet them on their level, have a 5-minute conversation, rally them back in, and just kind of organize it with the kids that we're recruiting and spending a lot of time doing that with. And I think that's something that you've done a really good job of is, hey, you know, you said keep yourself organized. You're going through every region in the country at the JUCO level right now and finding out, hey, you're looking at some data, but you're also doing bigger homework and different things and kind of see who's, you know, is a D1 player that might not make the grades and go to that, or who's, you know, maybe just missing one part of their game that makes them, you know, a Division I player, but not quite, you know, especially this day and age with the portal and the different things that are going on, the extra COVID year, there's a lot of really good players that are, you know, going to a level they probably should have went in the first place and aren't getting recruited too high. So it's really good. It's a good time to be an organized recruiter right now. I'll say that with what you got going on and things like that. And another thing that I think you do a really good job of that I've noticed is you kind of have someone in each region that you know, or each other country. So you like mentioned Arizona. So maybe there's a kid in Arizona you heard about, and you're able to have one person in every city in the United States or someone that you know that you can trust and ask those questions. And I think that's something that you pride yourself in. You know, yeah, you're a Midwest person, but, you know, hey, call me about Mississippi. You're calling your guy at Pensacola about what's going on in Florida, and you're calling some guy in Orlando or Charlotte that knows kids in different areas. And I think that really helps having one or two contacts in every city. And that's something that I've utilized Rising Coaches for as well. Hey, there's people everywhere and different levels and different things, and just asking questions, finding out who's out there is extremely important to recruiting.
Yeah. And you mentioned Twitter. I mean, that's obviously a huge thing. And it's funny that like Twitter is such a valuable resource for recruiting compared to like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And like, there's a lot of coaches I haven't ever met, and like, all right, you got a really good player, and you know, everybody wants their players to be recruited, and I want to recruit your players. And unfortunately some coaches don't respond, and you know, we're all victims of that sometimes, but and I really enjoy connecting with new coaches I've never met or anything like that. And some you like more than others, but I mean, I really enjoy connecting with, you know, guys and talking about basketball. And I try to give to, I know a lot of coaches, I would believe, reach out to all these junior college coaches just expecting so much and like, hey, give, let me get your player. And one thing I try to do, and I have like a list of my own of guys that I think could be JUCO players. And it's like, I'll tell these guys, you know, I'm on the phone with them. It's like, you know, I really appreciate, and whenever I say thank you and I appreciate, like, I really, really do mean that. Cause I know some time is tough to have, and give me like 10 minutes of your time. And, you know, I really, really appreciate it. And like, hey man, I got a list of guys. I know it might be way outside your region, but still here. Like, if you want to do your research, I believe these guys might be your level, but still try to find a way to give back to them as well. So we're not always taken from them.
Yeah. It's always good to have a, you know, a mutually beneficial relationship. And, exactly. And a lot of times in our business, a lot of stuff becomes transactional, but we don't, you know, you want to keep that authentic relationship and different things. And people don't forget, you know, how you make them feel in terms of making them feel valued and giving them something in return. Another thing that you've done very well, and, you know, you've sent to me in the past, is some of your playbooks. You know, some people may not have heard of, you know, Minnesota State University Moorhead, or they may not have heard of, you know, where you're from or don't know much about Minnesota, but they've seen your name in some capacity. And they're like, oh, I know that name. Where do I know that from? Well, you have CoachTube and you have different playbooks and different things that have kind of gone around, and people probably have seen something you've done. So tell us a little bit about, hey, one of your outside the box hobbies that you have of, you know, watching and breaking down film and utilizing Fast Draw and different things to make some of your edits and such.
Right. Well, one, like many coaches, I struggle with sleeping. So I'm probably averaging 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night, but I'm able to get up and work. But usually at night when my beautiful wife goes to bed, she goes to bed nice and early, I'll come to my home office and I'm going to watch a lot of film. And I'm, like I said before, I'm absolutely obsessed with this game, and I'm trying to learn day by day. And it's just funny to see how much I've grown just watching film compared to when I first did to where I'm at now and how quickly I pick up on things. But I've really just I've got such a more of an interest in creating playbooks. And I remember when I was a GA, like Walthall, he had just like endless piles of books and like playbooks, and I would like get them like a Spurs playbook, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. Like, oh my god, this is like gold. And as like trying to find stuff like that, I struggled to find, and I know there's ways to get it, like you could go buy them anywhere, but then I realized at one point, I was like, I mean, I could just make this myself. Like I'm watching film all the time. It might take a long time to make this stuff, But I really do enjoy. I mean, right now I'm currently, I did a BYU one this year. I'm breaking down Loyola and Iowa State right now. And it's just selfishly, I did it for myself, just so I could have my own archive of playbooks for when, you know, I would love to be a head coach at one point in my career. And at that point, I'm like, all right, I got like 30 playbooks, which maybe is overkill, but I can really dissect these 30 playbooks and figure out what I want to do with my team. But it's a pretty good way just to have those archived to move forward. And, you know, I really think then at that point I understood, it's like, you know, I had a few people reach out to me and say, hey, you know, you can make some money. It's like, I'm not concerned about making money on this. And, you know, I think at this point I do sell them on CoachTube. You know, I met some really cool people through that process. And I really think they are fairly cheap at this point. And, you know, some people have told me like, yeah, make sure you're putting out a product there that's, you know, worth their while. Some people think if it's too cheap, it's not even worth it. And it's like, again, I'm really not concerned about that. And if they buy it, you know, again, I make them for myself so I can have them. And then I put them up on CoachTube. And if someone wants it, it's their form. If not, you know, that's totally okay. But on top of the playbooks that I create, I obviously watch a ton of film with it. And I'll put a free video playbook attached with the playbook. So it's like, really, I'm giving you the free content. So I was like, I don't even need you to buy this playbook, because the video playbook, the 15-20 minute video playbook is right there for you. You could just draw it up yourself and make it if you want. So, you know, I just think it's a good resource that, again, I enjoy for myself, and I'll continue to grow it. I'm not overly concerned with it blowing up. If it does, that's fantastic. But I just really want it to be out there for coaches. And, you know, I found ways to just give free playbooks to some people because I know that they love it. And X's and O's can be very overrated, I think, but, you know, that's what a lot of coaches say, and everybody says you got to get players, but still you do have to find ways to, you know, put them around the floor to make sure it's successful and putting the ball where it needs to go. And it's just been interesting to see how much the game has changed in the last, you know, since I ever started coaching, you know, 8 years ago. So, I mean, it's a really enjoyable process for me, and I learn a lot doing it.
Is there anything specific? So doing all those playbooks, and obviously, you know, you're watching and you're figuring out your philosophies, you know, and hopefully one day soon you become a head coach. And, you know, what is something that you've noticed or a trend, you know, with successful coaches, or something that you really like or is extremely hard to guard that you have just kind of noticed that you other people don't talk about, or maybe a little bit more advanced that we don't realize, you know, in our day to day? Like, obviously, you see a cross screen and you're like, well, there's going to be some type of ending to it. So give us something that you have noticed by doing all these playbooks and spending all this time doing that.
Yeah, so obviously everybody has their own philosophy, and, you know, some people do the ball screen motion, continuities, and I think college has turned into everybody has packages, like a bunch of football offensive coordinators out here, and within those packages that all look the same, there's like 8 different counters in it. So that's always fun to watch, but in my opinion, as the more I've been watching here lately, and maybe I'm just not watching enough, but it just seems that there's a lot more quick hitting actions for a lot of people, more so just like ball screen setups, especially like just for Loyola, for example. A lot of what they do, I've been breaking them down lately, it's utilizing the big man on top. That's what I think a lot of people are doing, and that's why a lot of people are trying to recruit bigs that even can handle the ball a little bit up top. Cause like, if you can have an act a little bit up top to like turn into a ball screen, or, you know, into a nice a handoff or a pitch into a handoff, like some bigs really don't know how to do that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of teams are utilizing their bigs for passing, whether it's coming out, everybody's using like the down screen into a handoff. I swear every other team is doing that, you know, nowadays, and a bunch of miscellaneous ball screen setups. Like, it's all going to end up being the same, but it's like 5 seconds of an action and then boom, ball screen on the side or the middle, whether it's a Spain or a Ram. I mean, you're seeing a bunch of random setups to get that type of action. And I've seen a lot of people setting like the staggers. So like a really good guard is flying off a stagger. He's getting the ball up top, and it's usually followed by a ball screen. Okay. Or it's a guy's flying off the stagger. It's like a flip back and then into a ball screen. It's just a bunch of people are trying to get more creative to find ways for the defense to play in a ball exchange, whether it's like a DHO ball screen or flip back ball screen. Like, that stuff's hard to guard if you're not switching everything, in my opinion. So, and even if you do switch, obviously you got your mismatches, but I think people are trying to set up stuff like that. And, you know, one of my favorite teams to break down is Purdue. I mean, obviously they're one of the more powerful offenses out there, and they have more, you know, cool, pretty packages, but like that's more the longer stuff for the most part, but they have a lot of good pace with it. But again, I'm really just thinking it's quick hitting stuff, ball screens and staggers and stuff like that.
Right. That quick hitting stuff and random offense is very hard to guard when you mix up. Yeah. Hey, they can do a multitude of things. And especially when you have a weaker defender or a big that doesn't understand things as much, it's great to put him in as many actions as you can to help create, you know, paint touches and closeouts and just play from there. And then, like you said, you got to have players. You can have all the plays in the world. It doesn't matter if they don't know them, or B, they can't execute to finish the plays. But good stuff. So if any of our listeners wanted to find one of your playbooks, Coach Stoops the best way, or, you know, what's social media tags, or what you got?
Yeah, I mean, you could check on my Twitter. I mean, I got the link on there at Coach Berge, MSUM. Or if you just type in my name into, you know, Google, it'd be Tim Bergstrasser or Coach Tube, or it's just coachtube.com/users/Coach Berge. So, I mean, if it's something you're interested in, and to be honest, if, you know, whoever is listening, if you want to find my information on our website, MSUM, if you just want to literally just email me, it's like, hey, Coach, I listen to the podcast, you know, I love what you do, blah, blah, blah. I'll get you a free copy of something. I'll let you choose. Just go on my Coach Tube. Let me know which one you want, and I'll send it to you. Because again, I'm not overly concerned about making any money on these things, but it's again, good resource for any coach, I would say.
There you go. 36 minute mark. Get your free playbook. All right. As we wrap up here, is there anything that you know, any questions that I should have asked that I haven't, or anything that you want to share with our audience or talk about?
Oh, no, not nothing crazy I could think of. I mean, just like in any profession, you just got to work. It's just, there's no secret formula. I think you just got to keep working and try to find ways to put like-minded people around you that are going to work for you and work hard. And, you know, the one thing that I think our staff is really good at, and here at MSUM, is our head coach. He just, we'll always back and forth with each other, and I'll just always give my opinion, whether it's a yes or no. So I just like telling coaches, like, don't be a yes man. That's the biggest thing I tell our GAs, and it's tougher for younger GAs when they come in. And I was like, do not be a yes man. Like, that's just not going to work. You're going to hurt yourself, and it's not going to be better for our team. So I always tell our head coach, like, hey, whatever is the final stamp, and obviously he always has the final decision. For the most part, he always takes our input. It's like, whatever you do, like, I'm 100% supportive, whether I agree with it or not, but I'm always going to tell you whether I disagree or not. So, and again, that's built over time and with trust. But I just think, you know, coaches have to have those tough conversations and be vulnerable, just to be open, and what they might get shut down. I think some guys might take it just the wrong way, but that's one thing that a lot of coaches told me, is don't be a yes man. And to the best you can, just be as genuine of a person as possible. There's a lot of, unfortunately, I think there's a lot of fake people out in this world, and they're going to try to lead you the wrong way, whether they're, you know, whoever it might be. But you just got to really have a strong circle of really high quality people that are always gonna have your back. So,
yeah, I think that the loyalty aspect of it too. And, you know, just with like players, you know, how can you be coachable and teachable? Same thing with us as coaches is, hey, you know, we may have some ideas, and especially as an assistant coach, you got a lot of ideas. And then when you become a head coach, like, hey, you're just balancing, you know, anything and everything that's being thrown your way. And there's a lot of thought processes that go into thinking. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm just getting paid to think, because my brain is about ready to explode from the three things that everybody that I know brought to the table today. But, you know, hey, like you said, hey, being a yes man compared to, hey, being strong in your values and your core and being transparent and learning how to, you know, fight for what you believe in. But at the same time, hey, leaving that meeting, whether you all agree or disagree, when you leave that meeting, you're all on the same page. Exactly. And I think that goes into conversations you have with your players too, is, you know, it's not so much being right or wrong. You know, being right or wrong can't get in the way of winning. You can't want to be right more than you want to actually win. But at the same point, like, you need to be on the same page. I want to understand what's going on with each of my players or my staff, of what they're thinking and why they're thinking that way, and asking good questions that kind of goes into that. And I think that's, you know, going along with what you said, I think is extremely important, you know, for everybody, you know, just to become a better listener. And, you know, kind of figure out what's actually being said and why it's being said, and then move forward with it. And you know, find ways to make sure everybody's on the same page, because we're all on the same page, especially in a team sport. Things happen a lot better and they work a little bit better. And like you said from the beginning, like transparency, yep. Telling people the truth, being authentic and who you are, it helps you with recruiting. You know, tell someone up front that, hey, you're going to have to earn everything. And then they get here and they actually had to do that. I think it just builds that trust instead of building a recruitment or relationship on something that may be a skate of truth or not necessarily the full transparent truth. And I think that goes a long way. So we'll end with one more question, maybe a challenging one, but you know, what is the best thing in your life that can happen right now? And we'll end on that question right now. So what's the best thing that can happen in your life right now?
That we have a phenomenal practice this afternoon.
one day at a time. Very simple, man.
You said and everybody always talks about, you know, one day at a time, but it's easier or it's harder to do than one might think. Everybody is caught up in standings in the league and, you know, what it might be next week. And if we do this weekend, it's like sometimes coaches get caught up with it. I've been caught up in that sometimes, but I'm really just trying. I've been telling our guys that too lately, just how can we be so disciplined really to focus on today? Okay, just focus on practice, focus on the lift, focus on the scout. And everybody says that, but it's like, okay, you really got to focus and do it. Okay, it's just a very cliche thing to do, but you really have to handle that mentally.
Yeah, you can't live in the past. You know, that you can only influence the future by what you do today and right now. And today being present is the most important thing. And even if it's not game day, technically on a calendar, don't let that calendar determine what you're doing. You know, take care of your business today and kind of move forward. So every day is game day. So enjoy the rest of your game day. I appreciate you coming on to the podcast. And, you know, look them up on Twitter, social media, anywhere, the website, and get yourself a free playbook.
That's right. No, thank you so much, man, for this time. Again, I was really looking forward to this today. And if you haven't already, sign up for Rising Coaches, man. It's well worth it.
There you go. There it is. You heard it from the man himself. Get your membership today. All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks, man. See ya.